The Journey Into podcast is proud to present This Journey Into a Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. A journey into Star Wars, featuring numerous delusions of grandeur.
Over the course of about 2 weeks, we have been, or will be, featuring episodes of Delusion of Grandeur that have been previously released on a separate feed. If you've already heard these episodes, then perhaps you'll enjoy hearing them again. If not, when we're finished up here, you can come back and join us for future delusions as well as future journeys into history or science fiction or horror or fantasy or the variety of other things that we like to feature here on the podcast.
Should we clap?
Nope, I missed it. Let's try it again. This delusion was originally published on December 20th, 2013.
It's a dark time for the Podosphere. Marshal Latham, striking from a hidden base, has won his first victory since forming the Journey Into podcast. During the battle, he managed to steal Rish Outfield away from the Doomsdief podcast, forming an alliance between them based on their love for Star Wars. Pursued by the Empire's sinister agents, Marshal and Rish believe they have something interesting to say about the decades-old franchise, its characters, the players behind the scenes, and the new adventures to come. Clearly, they must be suffering from delusions of grandeur.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
Should we clap?
Welcome to the second episode of, what do we call this?
I believe it's Delusions of Grandeur, sir.
Yes, there we go. Of the Delusions of Grandeur podcast, where Rish Outfield and I, Marshal Latham, talk about Star Wars. And we always like to include a guest and have them talk about their experience with Star Wars and talk about a subject together. So today, Rish, who do we have with us?
Today we have my partner in crime from the Doomsdief Audio Fiction magazine, Big Anklevich. He and I went to college together, and when I discovered that he was into Star Wars, I thought, oh shoot, we should have been friends. But by then, it was too late.
We were already nemeses.
Ooh, let's see what he did there.
Yes.
Welcome, Big.
So
I didn't see what I did. What did I do? I didn't see.
You kind of did you went to the Star Trek instead of the Star Wars with Nemesis.
Oh shoot, I blew it. This isn't about Star Trek?
Nope.
I thought this was a Star Trek podcast.
No, sir.
Oh shoot. I've never even seen Star Wars. I don't know what is that? That's the one with the teddy bear guys in it?
That's right. Exactly. That's
Teddy Ruxpin.
Okay, sit down, son. We're going to convert you.
Uh-oh, okay.
We're going to keep your eyes open and make you watch all the films.
Not all. So, yeah. Big, if you wouldn't mind, give us just a little bit about your background, how you got into Star Wars, and what it means to you. Go!
Yeah, it's funny because when you guys sent me the email about the show, you said you wanted to hear my conversion story to Star Wars, and I don't think I can give a conversion story because basically I was born into the faith. I'm not quite old enough to remember a world when there was no Star Wars. I mean, I was born before Star Wars existed, but just barely. And from as young as I can remember, Star Wars was the cool thing. And even before I saw it for the first time, I loved it. I played it with my friends. I knew about all the characters somehow before having ever seen it. I remember the first time that I did see Star Wars. I mean, this was back in the day when video, you know, rental stuff was just, you know, hitting its stride. It was just getting big enough that there were stores popping up everywhere. And but the first time that I saw it was actually on TV. They showed it on network television for the first time, and it was this huge event. They had like an hour special beforehand talking all about Star Wars. Then they actually showed the movie.
What year was that?
Rish could tell you.
It was 83, right? When, like, September or November of 83?
Okay, that sounds right. Like, right after Return of the Jedi came out then, right?
Right.
Yeah, because I remember I probably had already seen Return of the Jedi, or I may not have. I don't think I saw Return of the Jedi until it was on video, unfortunately, because I was a part of a rather not well-to-do family, so we didn't go out to see films very much when I was a child, unfortunately. And if we did, it was the drive-ins, so that we could all get in for one price kind of a thing. But yeah, I collected the cards, I remember, that they had for Return of the Jedi. I've spoken with Rish about this a time or two. I still remember the one card. It was a Jabba the Hutt's palace card where Boosh has pulled out his thermal detonator, and everybody on Jabba the Hutt's court is freaking out because they're like, oh no, we're going to get blown up. And the card was titled A Court in Chaos.
Hmm.
And at the time, I had never heard this word chaos before, nor seen it written. I actually probably had heard it, but never seen it written for sure. And so I looked at that, and I just assumed that was one of those Star Wars words. And it was the court, and that was like the place on Tatooine that the court was at. It was a court in Chaos, I would say. So yeah, I collected the toys. I can't remember which birthday it was, but one year for my birthday, I went to the store with my family and I got to choose a bunch of Star Wars guys so I went through and I got all the, you know, the main ones. I got myself a Luke and I got a Leia and I got a Han and I got a Darth Vader and an R2 and a C-3PO and etc. I may have gotten, did Chewbacca and C-3PO, the broken C-3PO, come as one?
No,
it was a separate thing, because I know I had the C-3PO that would come apart.
Oh,
he came with the little bag that Chewie could carry on his back.
Yeah, like a little net backpack, and Chewie could carry it on his back. I remember having that. And the sad thing was, after having played with him for a little while, he pretty much always came apart. But that's just the way toys are, I guess. It's like every G.I. Joe I ever had, at a certain point, it just wouldn't stand up anymore. His knees were too wobbly, but... Anyways, yeah, that was one of those big, I really remember that moment, is going to the store and picking out each one of those. I think I had a limit of like 7 or 8 guys that I could get, and so I went through and chose very carefully, and I had to get one of each of the main guys. And then, from there on, I started my collection and, you know, moved up from there and got things like the Gamorrean Guard and the Weequay and stuff, but it wasn't the first ones that I got, obviously.
Just, you're starting in with Star Wars. Was it more about the toys and the hearing about it rather than actually seeing the movie?
It definitely was. It was more the community thing of it, you know. Everybody loved Star Wars. I loved it too, even though I didn't even really know it. I mean, I'd seen commercials, I'd seen toys, I'd heard people talk about it. I remember going to school, I want to say this was when I was in first grade, the first day coming in, and all the kids were like, oh yeah, did you see Empire Strikes Back over the summer? And oh, that part where the giant worm comes out, that was so awesome. And I remembered seeing that on the commercial, and I was thinking, oh yeah, that part was awesome. But I'd never seen the movie yet. So it took a while before I ever actually was able to get to the point. I may have even read the novelization of Return of the Jedi before I ever saw the movie of Return of the Jedi. I got it from the little school book club that you would get when you're in, you know, grade school.
Oh, I did the exact same with Empire Strikes Back. I read the Donald F. Glut novelization because there was no way to see the movie in between theater and video.
Yeah, sadly, that's the one novelization I don't have. I just realized when I got all my books out and put them on the shelf in my study when we moved, I don't have that one. I only have the first and the third, and I'm missing the second one. I need to get it.
You have the Star Wars written by George Lucas?
Yep, that's the one.
Lies.
That's where it all started.
But yeah, that's kind of my deal with Star Wars. That's where I started, I guess, my conversion story.
But did that go away as you got older? Or have you always loved Star Wars?
I've always loved it, yeah. I've never lost my love for it. The prequels have dampened it a little bit, I guess. I try to keep them separate because, there's just too much not to like with those. Still some good John Williams music, but beyond that, it's tough. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like, there's Star Wars things that happen now, and I don't pay attention to anymore. Like, there's a cartoon. Is there a cartoon that's going on right now?
No.
Oh, okay. So it was going on for several years, though, right? That Clone Wars one?
How many years did Clone Wars go, Marshall?
I believe there's 5 seasons.
Yeah, see, 5 years of a cartoon, and I never saw one single show of it.
I just started getting those on Netflix and watching them with my kids. We've only seen 2 of the discs, but it's kind of interesting. It's kind of neat to watch.
Yeah, see, I wonder if I'm missing out, if that makes me a Jack Star Wars fan or or what that is. Yeah, I don't know. The stuff from prequels era turns me off. I don't even want really to know about it. There was a time when I didn't miss a thing. I mean, I saw the Ewok adventure, and I saw the battle for the planet Endor, and I saw the droids cartoon, and I saw the Ewok cartoon. I even saw there was those cartoons that they did in between episode 2 and 3 that they did on Cartoon Network, where they were like 5-minute episodes. And then eventually they strung them all together into one film and put them out on DVD.
Oh, the one with Jabba's nephew, little baby hut thing?
No, he's talking about the Glendy Tartakovsky. It was just called Clone Wars.
Yeah.
It was hand-drawn animation, 2D.
Oh.
Right, yeah. They put them on the Cartoon Network, and then they put them out later, once they were all aired as one movie. And I mean, they were 5-minute episodes, so when they combined them all together, it made like 1.5 hours. And then they had 2 DVDs of this, so it was really kind of a 3-hour thing. And it was basically the space between episode 2 and episode 3, and it even ended like right where episode 3 started up. So that whole battle where they're in the middle of the assault on Coruscant, that was where that movie ended, and then episode 3 started up exactly right there. So I did see those too, but yeah, since episode 3 came and went, and I've just kind of, I don't know, it's like I'm somewhat, I guess, turned off to it. I'm really excited about the new live action films, but the Clone Wars stuff, even the one that came out in theaters too, the beginning, I think, of that cartoon.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I didn't see that one in the theaters at all. I never went and saw that. And I still haven't seen it. So I guess that makes me, I don't know what that means.
No, I hadn't seen him until, you know, a month ago.
It makes you Bantha Poodoo.
Oh!
But that's what I am, too. I haven't seen, I've only seen one episode of that Clone Wars cartoon, the CG one. But if you suggest that I check it out, Marshall, I would be happy to, and we could talk about it.
Yeah, I'll keep watching it, and I mean, they're interesting. You just have to kind of set them aside as a separate thing, like Big was talking about, and just say, okay, these are cartoons. They're based on the prequel characters, and just kind of go with it. You know, there's some of the, you get, they take the different Jedi Masters that you only see, you know, in the circle, and they feature them in different episodes. So that's kind of interesting to see these other Jedi Masters and their personalities and stuff.
Even the long neck one?
Not yet for that one, but...
Oh, I'm waiting for that long. I want to see that guy in a lightsaber fight. I remember seeing that right after episode one came out. Like, that guy could not possibly last long in a lightsaber fight because his head would be off quick. With that much neck to swing at, it would just be too hard to miss.
Everybody else loses their hands, but he loses his neck.
Right.
So, Big, you said something a minute ago that I think is worth repeating. You said that everybody loved Star Wars in those days.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I kind of was of the same mindset, and then Marshall sent me a clip. It was an interesting clip from 1983, so right after Return of the Jedi had come out. And it's from, what is it from, Marshall? The ABC Evening News?
Yeah, Nightline with Ted Koppel.
Nightline. And Marshall, do you want to set up that? I almost said set up that clip like this is a talk show.
Well, Jay, you see, well, it was a short little segment, probably toward the end of the show or something, and they just had this film critic on there, John Simon, and he had written a very scathing review of the Star Wars franchise and that movie in particular. So they had him on one side, and then they had Siskel and Ebert on the other side kind of championing Star Wars, and he kind of let them talk and asked a few questions, and it was just kind of shocking to see the vitriolic reviews. I mean, I guess I'd known that they were out there, but I hadn't really heard anybody talk about it like that. But let's go ahead and play the clip so that everybody can understand what we're talking about here.
Mr. Simon, you described The Empire Strikes Back, the second in this trilogy, as malodorous awful, and I understand you're also well able to keep your enthusiasm in check for the third in the trilogy. Why so unkind?
I think the raves for the early Star Wars have been so violent and so extravagant that I feel one cannot afford to mince one's words if one dislikes these things.
You
one
certainly has... did not do that. But why do you feel they are so bad?
I feel they're so bad because they're completely dehumanizing. Obviously, let's face it, they are for children or for childish adults. They're not for adult mentalities, which unfortunately means that they're not for a lot of my fellow critics who also lack adult mentalities. But anyway, they are for children, and they're brutalizing children, they're stultifying children, they're making children dumber than they need to be. A great work for children, like Huck Finn, for example, tells a child something about reality, about people, about life, about growing up. These films try to keep children stupid children forever, and that, I think, is wrong.
One of the things that stuck with me, I mean, he struck me as a very humorless man. And he said, you know, if I were to take children, if I were to have children to take them to a movie, you know, it would not be this. I would take them to see Tender Mercies. Dude, a kid would actually kill himself if you took him to see Tender Mercies.
Have you seen that movie?
Well, yeah, but...
I looked it up. I hadn't even heard of that. I looked it up and saw the synopsis of it. Didn't seem like something I'd want to watch when I was a kid.
But anyhow, he said these Star Wars movies... Now, about Empire Strikes Back, he called it nauseating awful or something like that, right,
Marshall? Malodorous awful.
Malodorous awful. And awful is like all the guts and stuff that's left over from a slaughterhouse that you throw away, you know, or that you feed to the pigs kind of stuff. And that's for Empire Strikes Back, you know, the high point of all the Star Wars movies. But yes, they were talking about Return of the Jedi, and he said that these three Star Wars movies were made for children or for adults with childlike minds.
Yep. He actually said that they were brutalizing children, and it was dehumanizing to watch it.
Was making them dumber than they already were, I remember.
And so Gene Siskel retorts by saying, you know, he saw Return of the Jedi a second time, this time in a packed movie theater where it was all kids, and they loved it, and they cheered for the good guys and booed for the bad guys and had the time of their lives. And that was my experience as a little boy seeing Return of the Jedi. Up until that, I had never seen a movie where people cheered.
I totally disagree with Mr. Simon. I don't know what he did as a child, but I spent a lot of my Saturday matinees watching science fiction movies and serials and having a great time of being stimulated and having my imagination stimulated and having all sorts of visions take place in my mind that helped me to become an adult and to still stay young at heart. And I would say not that I'm childlike, but that he is old at heart.
Yeah, when I think that Mr. Simon ought to do what I did over the weekend. I went to a regular movie theater in a shopping center in Michigan City, Indiana, and I sat amid all the kids. There was one tall head and a lot of small heads.
Were they dumber than they needed to be?
No, they weren't dumber, to quote that interesting phrase. they were ecstatic. They were enjoying it, and they were rooting. They were asking each other who's who. They were getting all involved. They were rooting for the right guys and booing the bad guys. I thought it was a lot of fun. I feel badly that this other critic, John Simon, didn't have a good time at these pictures. That's too bad for him.
Anyway, both of them get on there and they talk about their own childhoods and how they would go to the movies to see the serials and adventure and all that, and that it opened up their minds to the possibility of storytelling, to the possibility of other worlds or other, well, just to possibilities. And that was certainly my experience, but listening to John Simon, I couldn't help but go back to my experience at film school. Marshall, what did you study in school, man?
Engineering.
Did you ever run into somebody who said, I became an engineering student because of Star Wars?
No, I can't say that. Well, I did.
Maybe because of Mr. Scott on the Starship Enterprise, they became engineers. I don't know. But again and again, the people around me in film school said, I became a film student. I want to make movies because of Star Wars. That more than any other movie. Big?
Yeah, I would agree with you there.
And maybe because of that, or as a side effect of that, the administration at school they had an anti-Star Wars bias. And they held up Star Wars as something that happened to the film industry and it never recovered. Almost a disaster. You know, things were great until 9/11 and that changed everything. You know what I mean? They said Jaws and Star Wars came out and suddenly people didn't want to make art anymore. They wanted to make blockbusters. They wanted to make movies for kids and teenagers, and they never aspired to telling anything after that. They aspired to making a dollar. Have you ever heard people say stuff like that, Marshall?
Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about that changed. Jaws and Star Wars changed everything. And that now, you know, like you said, it's all about blockbusters. And, you know, I can see where they're coming from, that, you know, definitely there are the blockbuster movies that come out every year. But intermingled with that, there's all these other films as well. So there's a place for everything, in my opinion.
Okay, well, yes, you have a very even temper, I take it. But, you know, I would get so angry when I would hear, particularly one professor, who would push our buttons, or push my buttons, about Star Wars again and again. He's like, well, you take Star Wars, for example, and how basic that is and unchallenging that is for an audience. And, you know, it's like you take a story written for children, and now look at all these faces here in this class who are still children because of it. So listening to John Simon, I had flashbacks of that. And I would get so frustrating because, to me, Star Wars, it took a child and it showed him a vast universe where you could go in any direction and there was magic to be found. And then as an adult, watching Star Wars, suddenly I was that boy again. And I've probably said that to you a bunch of times, Marshall, on this show, but it's going to be like the through line of every episode is...
Catchphrase, the Rich Outfield catchphrase.
Yeah, Star Wars makes me maybe not a child, but makes me go back to childhood.
You say that, and then Marshall says, what you talking about, Rich?
And, you know, Roger Ebert talked about that as being young at heart. You know, and I think that's when we watch Star Wars, the original trilogy, you know, we are young at heart. And I think if you grow up so to speak, and think you're better than what made you excited when you were young, then I think you've lost something.
Well, first of all, you know, special effects are like the tail of the dog, which should not wag the whole animal. When you have a film that's 90% special, and that's a kindly estimate, 90% special effects, you might just as well be watching a animated cartoon, because finally all those special effects begin to look totally unreal. You're looking for something that looks like flesh and blood there. You have three lousy actors in the main roles who don't contribute much flesh and blood. You have ghastly dialogue, terrible plotting, miserable characterization, which also do not contribute flesh and blood. So what you're left with is something that Walt Disney could have done just as well with a drawing board and pencils and colors.
All right, Roger Ebert, beyond the undeniable fact that it's clearly perceived as entertainment by a great many people, how would you argue that it's a great movie?
These are the sorts of movies that Disney people should be making and the kinds of movies that Disney made 20, 30 years ago. I think all movies are special effects. Movies are not real. They're two-dimensional. A film goes through the camera, the projector throws the light on the screen, and that makes a special effect. It's a dream. It's an imagination. As to whether this film is good or not, it excited me. It made me laugh. It made me thrilled. And that's what a movie like this is for. I also enjoy films by Ingmar Bergman and people like that. I share that taste with Mr. Simon. But I try, I think, in my own movie-going taste to be broad enough to also understand why a bunch of people might want to get together and see a Star Wars movie and enjoy it.
Gene Siskel, is it not possible to separate these two and to say, yes, there's such a thing as great entertainment, but it's not a great movie. Let's not pretend it is.
Well, you can say what its aspirations are. I don't think that a film should be rewarded for aiming low and hitting that mark, which sometimes in film criticism you do get that. The sort of junk movie as campy fun. I don't think this is campy fun. I think this is well-made fun. This is very good of its kind, and I want to cite another film that's out now that shows you what this kind of film can be like if it's junk, and that's Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, shot in 3D. That movie is 3D and it's supposed to be kind of special. The Jedi film is in 2D, and it's a lot more exciting.
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting thing I thought, and I can't remember now because it's been a few seconds since I listened to the clip, but I think it was... Ebert that was saying that he shares some of the same tastes with John Simon. He said, I watch Star Wars and I also think this other stuff is good. And, you know, I can see a world where both of these things have a place. You know, something like something artsy, like the, what was it, Tender Mercies that he said he would take his kid to see if he had kids.
If he had kids.
Which, thankfully, he does not because they would have killed themselves by now. That's the thing I think that, and Marshall, I guess, was just saying that a minute ago, that, you know, there's a place for everything. There is a Sundance Film Festival for artsy films that, you know, artsy type of people want to see. And then there's the 20 screen megaplex that shows the same movie on six of those screens, you know, for the people that want the blockbusters. I don't know, it's hard not to rail against things that really disagree with you, though, I guess, so I can understand the guy's, you know, his deal, where he's going to sit there and complain about that kind of stuff, because, I mean, how much have, you know, Rish and I complained about Transformers, or about Man of Steel or something, you know, they're just poor examples of what they could be, but Star Wars, it's interesting, because I would say that Star Wars... is kind of, you know, you were saying earlier that it's the movie where everyone was trying to make a, you know, now they want to just make a buck. They want to make $1 billion on their movie or whatever. I guess it was less when Star Wars came around. But anyways, they want to make hundreds of millions of dollars on their movie. So they try and make a blockbuster so that it'll appeal to tons and it'll be a phenomenon and everybody will go and see it. And they don't try and make the artsy movies anymore. They want to make the big ones that everyone will see and they'll make lots. But it seems to me like that's kind of always been the way it is. I mean, long before Star Wars ever came out, they would make things like, you know, they had that movie with Elizabeth Taylor in it. It was Cleopatra, I think it was.
Sure.
Where they spent like $50 million making this movie. And I think all it made was $50 million in the end, which was a big number, but not... obviously enough to make up for the massive amounts of money. I mean, $50 million, and this was well before Star Wars. This was in the 60s that they made this film. So, how, you know, it would be equal to the amount that they spent on, like, Titanic. You know, they talk about how that one was such a big deal because it made $200 million. And, or sorry, it cost $200 million. It made way more than $200 million. But it seems like there's lots of benchmarks like that along the way through film history that kind of changed the way things are done. And, you know, Star Wars wasn't the last benchmark like that. You know, blockbusters started to become the thing, but it was a long time before we got to the likes of, you know, like Independence Day, I kind of see as one of those films where it was way more spectacle than anything else, and it made a ton of money. It was a huge hit. And since then, you know, it's like the more CG you can pack into your film, the better. You know, it was funny when that John Simon guy says, oh, 90% of the movie was a special effect. That's being kind, probably more than 90. It's like, dude, can you imagine what he would have said about, like, Phantom Menace or any of the new ones?
Yeah, that's interesting, because when he said that, that's what went through my mind. I'm like, well, isn't that what me and everybody else says about the prequels, that, you know, George lost the magic when he did everything in CGI and you don't have practical effects and all these things. And so it was interesting to hear him say that, because, you know, that kind of echoes what a lot of people are saying now.
Yeah, I just thought it was weird that he would say that, because, I mean, he complained that there was nobody that had faces that you can relate to. Even the robots had a face, like C-3PO. The only one that didn't have a face was R2-D2, the only guy. And he talked about, like, robots are fighting other robots, and there's just robots everywhere. There's pretty much just two robots.
Well, he must have considered Vader and Stormtroopers and Biker Scouts to all be robots, right?
Yeah, he must have gone that way, I guess. I was really confused. But the guy, it seems like he was a little slow-witted, really, when it comes down to it, in his complaints, because I think Siskel says afterwards, he's like, that was not my experience. I went to the show with a bunch of kids, and all the kids knew exactly what was going on. They weren't confused. They could follow it easily. You're just a retard.
Well, I think, you know, he obviously didn't like it to begin with. And so if he didn't like the first movie and he didn't care about any of the characters, you know, when he sees the other ones, he's not going to even really pay attention to try to understand what's going on, I think.
Well, you know, I heard a parallel to that really recently. Some critic was writing off the entire subgenre of superhero films. And he was saying, you know, that they're so convoluted now and you have to have a textbook to know who is who and what is referring to what other movie that has already come out, that, you know, they're all the same and it's only for diehard geeks. And I just thought, what movie is he talking about? I mean, probably he's talking about the Marvel Studios films where they do refer to one another, but that has not been my experience at all. Those movies can be in...
The box office for those movies seems to suggest that they're not just for diehard geeks.
My thought was, well, this guy went to the movie and he sees them referring to other movies and he just mentally checks out. He gets out his phone and he starts texting or whatever, and he's just like, this is not for me. This is only for geeks. And I don't know how anybody who's not a geek could follow this. And I felt like John Simon was doing the same thing. I don't know what they had in 1983 for him to be checking out instead. Maybe he was reading the paper.
Reading his past columns.
What's a paper?
But yeah, Return of the Jedi is not hard to follow.
I was just going to say, you know, it's kind of a, you know, we talk about Star Wars becoming people's religion. And there are people that kind of do that. But I guess it is kind of like a religious thing where... Just, you know, hearing John Simon talk about Star Wars as if, you know, saying that it's dehumanizing and it's a jumble and chaos and you can't identify with anybody on the screen.
I think there are wonderful things that you could take kids to. There's a little film called Tender Mercies, which is not a children's movie, but in which a child is one of the main characters. And that is the sort of thing that I would take my children if I had them. where they can see something about human beings, about life. In this thing, you see one set of robots, some of them ostensibly flesh and blood, but actually just as mechanical as the real robots, attacking another set of robots. It zaps you, it races past you, projectiles are hurtling this way and that. There's nothing to get involved with. Sure, there is a very primitive sense in which the Empire is bad and a very primitive sense in which the others are good, but it is all such a chaos, such a jumble, such a confusion, such a mechanical, technological whirligig that you don't have any chance to associate yourself with anyone, to identify yourself with anyone. There are no people there with whom you can sympathize.
That just isn't my experience in seeing it, again, with a whole bunch of kids. They were able to sort out who was who very easily. They had no trouble with this picture, understanding what was going on.
When he says that, that just sounds so foreign to my experience and most of the people that I talk to. It just, you know, it's almost like, you know, you have a somebody like Richard Dawson or something talking and to somebody that's, you know, been religious all their life. It's like, well, what do you mean?
Richard Dawson was the host of the Family Feud.
Right?
Oh, Dawkins. Richard Dawkins survey says.
Oh, that's messed up. Well, you mentioned Transformers, and yeah, I hate that movie, not because it takes something that I liked as a child, but because it's such bad filmmaking, and that first movie was bad, but it made, what, $350 million domestic. And so the second Transformers came out, and it was worse. And it was like, who cares if it's worse? Because it also made $350 million. If the audience expectation is so low that nobody can tell the difference between crap and art, then why would you ever make art? And maybe that's what John Simon is talking about, and he lumps it all together. For me, it's so easy to hold up one of those kind of movies and then hold up something like, I don't know, I use Transformers. Surely there's another example of a movie that's like that, but...
Battleship.
Okay, Battleship is fine. And they seem to be night and day to me, but... You know, if you were in the position of making a movie and somebody told you, if you work your butt off, you're going to make $300 million on this movie. If you phone it in and sleep in until noon and write the script the week before, you're going to make $300 million on this movie. A lot of people would be like, well, clearly option B is preferred. And the landscape of film has degenerated a little bit since Return of the Jedi in 1983, but mostly because of that, because there are movies a heck of a lot worse than Return of the Jedi that made a lot of money, and people learned the lesson, well, it doesn't have to be good.
Yeah, I wonder what it is that it does need to be, because Battleship didn't do well, and it was basically the Transformers, but with ships instead of cars. What it is that makes something hit it off and what it
isn't.
It's
all a crapshoot too, because we've all seen movies that were really, really good that bombed at the box office. You know, I hold up John Carter of Mars all the time. That was a really fine film, I thought. And it's maligned, and Disney never wants to take a chance again because they had John Carter of Mars and then Lone Ranger, and both of them are pretty notorious bombs. But I felt like, wow, that should have been a hit. That should have struck a chord with people. Andrew Stanton should be doing, you know, whatever he wants in Hollywood now. But because people were turned off by the ad campaign, turned off by the title, turned off by something, nobody went to see it. And then again, you'll get a movie that, you know, is really bad that people just love. Or I don't know if they love. People just attend. And so you never know.
Yeah, swinging us back around to our original topic of conversation, the whole thing with the people who had something against Star Wars, and you were talking about film school and that one particular teacher, that if I remember right, yeah, I think you used to really hate that guy while we were at school, but I think since we've been gone from school, you've grown to understand him and perhaps even appreciate him. Is that an accurate description of things?
I think that's a fine description. He was challenging. And as a kid, I didn't like to have people challenge my beliefs or challenge my point of view or tell me that I'm wrong. And I still don't. But sometimes after you've been challenged, it makes you re-examine why. Well, why do I like Star Wars? Or why? And a lot of times he would ask these questions of, you know, like, why would anybody like Raiders of the Lost Ark? Next. And nobody would speak up. I would be seething and, you know, just trying to find a voodoo doll of this guy when I got off. But I think what he wanted is for somebody to raise their hand and say, I liked Raiders of the Lost Ark because of this. And stand up to him and have an opinion and have a backbone. But as a 20-something in a mass of other 20-somethings where you don't want to rock the boat, I didn't dare do that. I didn't dare disagree, or I didn't have enough confidence in myself to say, now wait a second, there's a big difference between Raiders of the Lost Ark and Space Hunter 3D, or, you know, it.
Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone?
Is that what it was? I think Molly Ringwald was in that.
Oh, sweet. It was something like that. Yeah, I can't remember. But yeah, I think that teacher didn't really have anything against Star Wars, per se. I don't think he was a fan of it, but I think he just chose it because it was the sacred cow for everyone. And so he would say stuff like that so that he would get, I think, the most reaction and the most... he wasn't like our Mr. John Simon, who was just hateful. John Simon seemed like the guy who is, you know, it's like Rish with Twilight or something, you know. Everybody loves Twilight, and he's just like, F all you people that love Twilight. Twilight is stupid. I'm going to use big words like malodorous awful to describe it, so you guys won't even understand how much I'm putting you down. And that's what that John Simon guy seems like. Just one of those people who is just sick of hearing of it, you know. He's just like, yeah, Star Wars was fine, but screw all you guys. It wasn't the Second Coming. But, yeah, I think our teacher was a little different in that he was just looking for something, a button that he could push on us. So, like you were saying, so he would challenge us, make us think about things instead of just being like, yes, I love Star Wars. Star Wars is good. I want to make Star Wars. And then you go out to make a film once you're done with film school. And it's just a lame copy. It's a Space Hunter in the Forbidden Zone version type of a copy of Star Wars. You know, you're just like, well, I love Star Wars because there's robots. There's two robots that are funny. One of them's gay and one of them's a trash can. And they talk to each other and they like kind of make fun. So I'm going to do that in my movie.
He might have just been afraid of it, inspiring people, or he didn't want people just to go out there, like you're saying, and just make derivative works. He wanted them to think for themselves, kind of thing.
Right, yeah, I think that's what he was after, was just trying to challenge us to where we understood what it was that we liked, and that was the thing. And it's not just that we need a guy who can fight with a laser sword. It's, you know, the parts of the character or the storytelling aspects, or the structure of the story or the different things. That really is what we like, and not just making something that's a lame ripoff. Because, yeah, I'm sure a lot of us probably would have graduated from college and then tried to make a ripoff of Star Wars in one way or another. Be like, ah, we'll make Star Wars as a Western, because that's cheap. So, you know, I mean, I don't know what he was really after, but it seems like it was something like that probably is why he would do that.
Or Star Wars with a dragon.
Yeah, there you go. Star Wars.
Thank you, Marshall. Better you than me, man.
And we'll call it Dragon with an E at the start of it. But yeah, I think that means so. I'm glad that he did that, to tell you the truth, because it made me, and I was a little irritated with it. Mostly I was intimidated by this guy, unfortunately. And I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people didn't speak up, is because this is our professor and he's the guy that gives us our grades. And we're paying all sorts of money just to attend his class. The last thing we want is to get a bad grade and have to attend it again and pay for it again. And so we're afraid to upset him. But that's probably what he was after.
So when you guys run into people that don't like Star Wars or, you know, just see it as silly nonsense, I mean, do you feel bad toward those people or do you take that? Can you still be friends with somebody that doesn't like Star Wars, I guess?
I can obviously still be friends with those people because I would say 50% of girls out there probably just think Star Wars is ridiculous stuff. Maybe even a higher number than that. I don't know what my wife actually thinks about Star Wars, but I know that she doesn't think it's amazing or anything like that. And I am married to her, so I must be able to get along with them.
Obviously, you're friends with
but,
her.
But sometimes you'll hear those people that be like, I've never seen Star Wars. And that always amazes me how they've managed to go all that time. But, you know, I don't get too upset with someone like that or feel bad for them or anything like that. Because I'm sure that there is something that they feel that way about. I've joked with Rish calling the Pride... BBC? Yeah, the BBC miniseries of Pride and Prejudice. I call that the girls' Star Wars trilogy. It's that five-hour miniseries with Colin Firth from the BBC. And it seems like every woman knows and loves that. It seems like nowadays there's a whole lot of derivative Jane Austen kind of stuff, whether it's the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies or the YA novel that's Pride and Prejudice except for set in high school, or
the Bollywood Bride and Prejudice,
etc., etc. There's tons of those things, which I guess are basically the Space Hunter Ventures in the Forbidden Zone knockoffs of the... It seems to me like they all kind of started up after that miniseries came out, you know? It's like that's, again, the, you know, the catalyst. And unfortunately, these people's teachers, if they had any, never told them, hey, why do you like Pride and Prejudice? Don't just copy the story and set it somewhere else. Figure out what it is about it that's great and tell a story that has that in it. So there is some use for all that money, I guess, that we put into college. Although, not really, because I didn't even go into work doing film, so whatever.
You mean there's never going to be a Dune Steve the movie?
Well, I can't, and you can never say never. But you can say never again. Oh, wait, you're never supposed to say that either. Sorry, you can't say any of that. But yeah, I mean, you never know. It's possible, but I wouldn't expect it. Heck, they even made an Ender's Game movie, and it seemed like that was never going to happen, too. So, who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we'll probably have to wrap up. But
yeah,
when I run into people who have said, I've never seen Star Wars, I'm always curious what they would think. I mean, maybe you've sat down with your children, Marshall, and Big, I know you have with your children, and shown them the Star Wars trilogy. And to me, that's just super exciting. I showed that to my sisters, and one day I will show it to my nephews. Return of the Jedi was on just last week on FX or the Man channel, whatever that channel is called.
Spike, I think.
And... you know, I tried to get my nephews to sit down, and they're just too little, or maybe they have no attention span because of their generation. But to me, that seems like a really, boy, I'm going to oversell it here, but it seems like an intimate thing that you can do with somebody is sit down with them and watch the Star Wars trilogy and gauge their reaction and find out what grabs them and what they're intrigued by, and I remember Big's son saying that he thought that some of these special effects in Empire Strikes Back were cheesy. And, oh, I was filled with such ire. And then Big reminded me, well, maybe he was talking about the added CG in the special editions. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's all right that he said that.
Yeah, we probably, because we have such good memories, we probably do hold on to some of these things more than somebody with a less nostalgic eye would. Probably don't want to get into it for this episode. Maybe we'll have Renee on one time. But I just remember last year at the NMX, you know, Renee talking about how she thought the prequels were fine well, at least from her kids' perspective, that they enjoyed him and everything. And where we see a lot of weakness, you know, we experienced Star Wars when we were children, and so we might not see the flaws and whatnot.
That's probably true. I think because of being a child, you're able to see beyond flaws and stuff like that. My daughter just saw Pacific Rim for the first time the other day. She wanted to see it, and she rented it. She's like, oh, yeah, it was fun. I liked it. It was good. And I was just like, okay. Seeing it the second time, it wasn't even as good as it was the first time. But, you know, I could totally see how if I had seen that when I was her age, oh, my gosh, that would have been the raddest movie ever. And I remember it's funny because somebody suggested it to me once. They're like, oh, yeah, we went and saw the Pacific Rim the other day. You ought to try that, you know. I found it to be fun, and I thought if I had been a kid when this movie came out, it could not have been more perfect for me. And sadly, I probably would have loved it then too, but yeah, it's not perfect for me anymore, unfortunately. There's too many goofy things in it that just didn't work, but
well, yeah. I guess that's why, you know, Siskel and Ebert are my hero after seeing this, because I mean, they were well into adulthood when they watched these, and they loved it. You know, they found the benefit, the good feelings that came from watching Star Wars and the fun of it.
Yeah, they were able to put themselves in that frame of mind again and experience it with the childish eyes, which is sometimes hard to do and impossible for John Simon to do, apparently. But yeah, that is something special about those things from your childhood. And I don't know what it is about Star Wars. I guess it really worked for a lot of people, and so it has become such a culture in and of itself that 36 years after the show came out, people are starting up brand new podcasts just about Star Wars.
That's right.
New ones that are just barely getting their second episode out even. It's crazy the loyalty that movie has made.
It may just be a delusion of grandeur, Big.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes what 30 years from now people will be talking about in the same way. Will it be Lord of the Rings? Will it be Marvel films? Will it be Transformers movies? What is it going to be 30 years from now that people are like, oh yeah, when I was a kid and I saw this for the first time, and oh, it was a religious experience, and I started a church of the Valhalla because I loved Thor so much.
Well, we saw a little bit of that when Avatar came out, that there were people that felt like it was some kind of religious experience, that they had been transported to a world that was real to them. And I didn't think Avatar was anywhere nearly as good as that, or as Star Wars, but I understood what they were talking about, because I had been transported that same way by that Star Wars trilogy. And so maybe if they had made a trilogy of Avatars, everybody would still be talking about that. I don't know. It'll be interesting when that second one finally comes out to see if people go flocking to it, hoping to be moved or transported in the same way that they were in 2000.
Yeah, it'll be like Toy Story 3, where they're now in college and they're like, oh yeah, I saw that when I was 7 and loved it. Finally, Avatar 2 is out.
Yeah, I was trying to think of anything that in my mind measured up to Star Wars as far as that. And I guess maybe the Toy Story, the early Pixar films are kind of like that. You know, that kind of a following and a nostalgia that I feel. That's probably the only thing that really comes close to Star Wars, I guess.
Yeah, one time I heard Rish call the Lord of the Rings trilogy the Star Wars trilogy for this generation. I think he was appalled because he saw Elijah Wood doing a dancey dance on Yo Gabba Gabba. And he was just saying, oh, the Luke Skywalker from the Star Wars trilogy of our generation is reduced to this. And all I could say was that I remember seeing Luke Skywalker, or Mark Hamill anyways, on The Great Space Coaster when I was a kid doing a little bit on there. So I think it's pretty similar. So,
or the Muppet.
Yeah, was he on the Muppet Show as well?
Yeah.
I guess pretty much everybody was, the freak they had.
In the holiday special.
Shoot, Luke Skywalker starred with half of the Muppets on the actual films that he was in, so might as well be on the Muppet Show.
We don't have to include this, but it was funny the other day. Have you guys listened to Rebel Force Radio at all?
No.
No.
Oh, they're a podcast. They won the Parsec Award for Best Fan Cast or whatever, but they're huge Star Wars, and it's kind of interesting to listen to their podcast. But they were talking about when the Donnie and Marie Show did a Star Wars tribute, and they had Paul Lind as one of the Empire thing, and they had C-3PO and R2-D2 on there. And I mean, I'm flabbergasted how huge Star Wars was.
Well, everybody's done a Star Wars tribute at one time or another. That 70s show has done one. You know, and the Family Guy and every one of those, Simpsons and all of those, they all do Star Wars episode at least once.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like everyone has a Star Wars show at least one time in there. Because it's so universal that everybody knows, it's something you can always go to.
Well, Wish, bring us home.
Oh, hey, folks, we got to bring this podcast to an end. The Death Star has cleared the planet. So, I want to thank you, Big, for taking some time out of your very big, much busier than my schedule for being on this show.
No problem.
And Marshall, I have no idea what your schedule is like, except for it must also be busier than mine.
It can get busy, but I must obey my master.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, those cost 4 whoopee whoopee.
Oh, no, don't say that. That's awful. Let's blow this thing and go home.
All right.
And we'll be back in a month or so with another episode of Delusions of Grandeur.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, thank you, all one of you.
The Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. Feel free to share it, but do not change it or sell it.
Well, Wish, bring us home.
By coming up with a quote, is that?
Oh, yeah, or just closing words.
Just sign out, man. Say, well, I guess that's it, and thanks for listening, and F you guys.
Okay.
Whoopee, whoopee.
I got to ask Mr. Simon a question. Here's sort of a test question. Wasn't your heart warmed even a little bit by Yoda?
Well, yes, I mean a little, but let's say if I saw him in a window of F.A.O. Schwartz and I looked at him for 3 seconds and said that's a kind of cute little figurine, I would have had enough of Yoda.
Jedi Voodoo.